Well, good morning and welcome to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future, the live local show that's all about the issues of aging. I have a lot of stuff to talk about today. I want to talk about care contracts a little bit today. I want to talk about Medi-Cal some today. I want to talk about Medicare some today. I want to talk about some articles on banks and a bunch of other stuff. Social Security, some new proposals in Congress. But, you know, as always, this show is dedicated to the issues of aging. How do we take care of ourselves, our friends, our family? How do we make wise decisions about ourselves? Welcome. Good morning and welcome to Assets and Aging. I'm your host, Bob Scrivano, here for 18 years. Every week, almost 19 years, I think, or maybe I'm in my 20s. I don't know. It's been a long time. Glad to have you with me. Lots to talk about. Lots of information. Remember, as always, I'm not an attorney. I don't practice law. I don't give legal advice. If you want legal advice, you should consult an attorney, not me. I have a California insurance license, a legal document assistant license, recorded in Sacramento County, California. And I'm not securities licensed, and everything we talk about here is my opinion only and should not be taken as any form of legal, tax, or other advice. It's just my opinion as it relates to the issues of aging. Also, you may hear me take a drink of water once in a while because I'm at the end of a cold, and sometimes I cough. So bear with me a little bit as we get through this. Lots of ways. Oh, first thing, my book is done. On May the 15th, which is only a couple of days, is the day after you're listening to this show. On May the 15th, you can go to my website, assetsandaging.com, ASSETSANDAGING, assetsandaging.com. You can scroll down there. You'll find a link to buy my book. It's $15. It's available in e-format only right now, so Kindle, Nook, or a PDF. You can print it out. I think it's a good book. It's chock full of information and tidbits and things that I think are going to be helpful to people. My goal always along the way was to be helpful to folks and to make a difference and give them an outline, a way for them to take care of their families and their friends and what make wise decisions. So my book, it's called Navigating Frailty, and I think you'll enjoy it. It's a family guide. It's meant for families. It's meant to be read. It's not a technical book. It's a book that's aimed at the problems and issues of aging, and hopefully, this is my hope at least, solutions to those problems that we can find together and try to make things better for families and for those of us that are getting a little older and getting a little bit more frail. So, I don't even know where to start today. I think I'm... Oh, a couple other things. Don't forget also, you can go down my webpage, assetsandaging.com. You can find my upcoming workshops. You can find my archived radio shows, archived podcasts. Every Wednesday at noon, I do a live podcast. You can sign up for my newsletter, which is free. All by going to assetsandaging.com. But starting on the 15th, you will be able to buy my book. My book is only $15 in e-version, and I think you'll find it very useful. I've had very favorable comments back so far from people who have read the book. I like it, and I like the way it turned out. Where do I want to start? There is so much to talk about. It's going to be really important in the upcoming months. Those of you that are older and getting older or take care of, there's going to be a lot of, I can't use the word, junk in the air about Medi-Cal and Medicaid and Social Security and the Health Care Act and all that kind of stuff. And it's going to be very hard for you. I don't care what side of the political spectrum you're on. It's going to be very difficult for you to tune out the noise and try to try to make some sense out of all of it. And it's going to be hard to make sense out of all of it, but I think it's important that you do. And I think it's going to be really important for seniors and people who are older or going to get older to be able to fine-tune and read broadly, because you're going to hear a lot of hyperbole. One of the things I've learned when it comes to this stuff over the years is that basically there is no single source of news you can trust. You have to go glean from lots of different places. You have to dig. You can't go to one network or one magazine or one blog or one whatever. You have to explore. You have to look around to find out what's really going on. Because one of the things I've learned about politics and politicians is they're very, very good at the art of mirage. Making you think you see something, water, when all there is desert. And so I think it's going to be very important as you listen to everything that's going on. This is not the normal tone of my show, but I think it's important. And I'm going to read you some articles today from different places, and I hope they help you to understand how important it's going to be for you to be educated. That, for lack of a better term, I don't have a better way to put it, but to be educated. So this is from the Wall Street Journal, Wednesday, May 10th. And there's a lot, you know, and it's page, let's see, May 10th, page A19, and you should read it for yourselves. It's an article by Andrew Biggs. He was formerly the Deputy Commissioner of the Social Security Administration. So he's talking about Social Security, and there's some proposals, and they're not coming from the Republicans, folks. They're coming from Democrats. That's why I said I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. That at the end of the day, you got to pay attention to this stuff. And basically, the proposal is it's a Representative John Larson. Social Security 2100 Act, which has 160 co-sponsors. But one of the things that it will do is raise Social Security taxes a lot, so that, you know, employers and people who are working, who are paying into the Social Security system, they can expect their payroll taxes to go up. For instance, Social Security payroll taxes would go from 12.4% to 14.8% between 2019 and 2042. That's a huge amount of money. Also, it would take away the ceiling. Right now, we only pay Social Security tax on the first $127,000 of income. That ceiling would be removed, so you would pay Social Security taxes no matter how much money you made, and you all know how much money you get back at the end from Social Security, right? I mean, it's huge, okay? When you add to it state taxes and everything else, and payroll taxes and federal taxes, it would raise the highest marginal tax rate to 59% in California to 72%. I think those numbers, when you start to look at them, and how many of you have read anything about this or studied it or even heard anything about it? None of you have, because it's not being talked about. Because nowhere in it does it talk about cutting Social Security. because no one likes to hear the term, we're going to cut Social Security benefits, because Social Security is in deep trouble, folks. Understand there is no Social Security trust fund. There is no lockbox. It's a part of the general liabilities of the United States government. So instead, what it will do is raise payroll taxes. Now, what that does is it allows people to have less money in their pocket while they're working. That will have an impact on people. That will have a huge impact on people. It would make a difference in the deficit, in the Social Security's deficit. It won't eliminate it, but it's going to have a huge cost to people who are working and their budget. I highly recommend you read the article. There's lots happening right now. There's positioning on both sides, and I highly recommend that you read this little article. Again, from the Wednesday, May 10th, Wall Street Journal, page A19. And it's an article by Andrew G. Biggs. And I can't recommend it enough. Okay? So let's go to the next one. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Also from Wednesday, May 10th. That was a good issue, folks. This is page A12. And I've been talking about this for a long time, that Medicaid and Medi-Cal are going to break the bank. California is already deep in the red over Medi-Cal. One-third of the population of California is on Medi-Cal. Stop and think about that. One-third of the population is on Medi-Cal. 28% are non-elderly adults. So 28% of all those people on Medi-Cal are non-elderly adults, followed by seniors with and persons with disabilities. The remainder of the caseload mostly includes undocumented immigrants eligible for limited Medi-Cal benefits. This is from the Public Policy Institute of California, April 2017. My point is what? My point is that you can't have forever one-third of the population of California receiving free health care benefits and not have an income, an impact on state budgets. That's followed up with the article I wanted to read, I wanted to make note of from the Wall Street Journal. Page A12, Wednesday, May 10th. Healthcare debate hinges on Medicaid. Medicaid and Medi-Cal are the same. And what's happening, and this was always going to happen, it has nothing to do with the current administration. When the Affordable Care Act went into effect and states got federal money, by the way, federal money is whose money, folks? It's taxpayers' money. It's not like the federal government produces money. So when they say the federal government's paying for health care, that's taxpayers. You can like it or not like it, but that's who it is. It was always designed so that after the Affordable Care Act went into effect, commonly called Obamacare, the federal government would pick up less and less and less over the years of the Medicaid costs to the states. Which meant what? The states were going to have to start making up the difference out of their own pockets, which is exactly what's happening. More and more and more and more states are beginning to run budget deficits pardon me, on their Medicaid, because the feds are paying a smaller and smaller and smaller share. So in 2015, total Medicaid spending, federal and state Medicaid spending, was just under $600 billion. Okay, now bear with me on this, because this is important stuff. You want to know, you're trying to sort out all the chatter that's, you know, in the air right now. I'm going to try to help you do it. So federal and state spending on Medicaid which is healthcare, has nothing to do with the exchanges, has nothing to do with private insurance. This is publicly funded healthcare. And this doesn't count Medicare. This is just Medicaid and Medi-Cal. Just under $600 billion. In 2005, the state and local governments picked up just under $150 billion. In 2015, the last year, this will be bigger now. The states were picking up about $175 billion of the cost. So the cost went from about $140 billion to $175 billion that the states were picking up out of their budgets. Now, stop and think. We're the biggest state. We're running about a $2 to $3 billion Medi-Cal budget deficit every year. I don't know how you sustain that, folks. I don't know how you build roads and how you help education and how you do all the other stuff that you do when you continue to run those kinds of deficits, and when you begin to realize that most of the large tech companies in California don't pay any taxes because most of them are offshore. So the title of this article is Healthcare Debate Hinges on Medicaid, which is also Medi-Cal. Benefits for newly insured hospitals and communities are also state budget busters. The only place you've heard it is here. Nobody's talking about it. You all passed the smoking tax last year that was supposed to raise $1 billion to help pay for Medi-Cal, and it's still going to run a $2 to $3 billion deficit. It's a budget buster. A lot of this article focuses on Oregon, particularly Klamath Falls, and it's talking about what it's doing to their budget. You can imagine what it's doing to California. And you'll hear a lot about the uninsured rate. Well, people already had availability of Medi-Cal. Now it's mandated. And again, now approximately 30%, almost one-third of everybody in California is on Medi-Cal, and it's not sustainable. The growth in state Medicaid spending is expected to be 5.9% in fiscal year 2017, compared with 4% in currently. Stop and think about that. In a budget the size of California, that's about a 30% increase in expenditures. When you begin to look at all of this stuff, you have to be able to... I wish I could read the whole article to you. I hope you'll go read it. I hope you spend time educating yourself. And again, here's the subtitle of the article. Federal dollars paid for Oregon's Medicaid expansion. Now the state has to pay. It was always that way. It's got nothing to do with the current administration. It was written into the law as part of the Affordable Care Act, commonly called Obamacare. You have to differentiate. I've already talked about Social Security. I've talked about Medi-Cal and Medicaid. And I want to talk a little bit about Medicare here in a second, but you have to differentiate between all of these. Some states, Maine, pardon me, has begun to push for work rules for able-bodied adults who are on Medicaid or Medi-Cal. Lots of people are fighting back on that, but because it's a budget buster, states are looking for ways to... begin to be more creative. Again, an article in the Wall Street Journal, April 15, 16, page A3, Maine pushes work rules for Medicaid, which is Medi-Cal, same as Medi-Cal. So states are beginning to feel the push of all of this. So healthcare, stop and think for a minute, folks. Healthcare in the United States is 1/6 of our economy. If you tweak 1/6 of our economy, 2% up or down, we're talking about large amounts of money. And I'm including in healthcare Medicare and Medicaid and private insurance. I forget who, I just read it today, a large health insurance company is, and I don't want to say who because I forgot, but you would know the name, is pulling out of all the current health exchanges nationwide. Premiums under the current health premiums are expected to rise 4-6% this year. Everybody can talk about all the other parts of the economy and jobs and all that, and it's really, really, really important. But what I've been talking about here for all these years, which is Medi-Cal and healthcare and Medicare and Social Security and those things, when you're talking about 1/6 of the economy, an increase here or a decrease in taxes there or more help here, it begins to be make a huge, huge, huge difference. Huge. I can't tell you how much difference it makes. And all of a sudden, if you're adjusting people's payroll or Social Security or Medicare premiums or Medicare supplement premiums, it begins to make a huge difference on people. And I think it behooves you, if I get anything across today, is that first you begin to understand the jargon. In fact, I discuss some of the jargon in my book. The understanding the differences between Social Security, Medicare, Medicare Part A, Medicare Part B, Medicare Supplements, Medicare Part D, and Medi-Cal Medicaid. To begin to understand the differences in those and how they're all linked but all separate but all impact the bottom line of states and people who are dependent on those things for their health care or their income or whatever it is. You are going to have to become more educated. You are not going to be able to believe one source, including me. You are not going to be able to just go to one news source or one magazine or one newspaper. Heaven help us that there's actually something informative in most newspapers anymore. It's going to be important that you search out and seek the truth, and that you understand it beyond the politics of it. As I said before, one thing I've learned about politicians and politics in my almost 72 years on this earth is that they're experts at mirage. They're excellent at being shapeshifters. Don't just believe what you've heard or what somebody tells you or what you read. Go spend time investigating, because it's going to make a difference in your life, it's going to make a huge difference in your children's lives, and it's going to make a gigantic difference in your grandchildren's lives, how this all shakes out. Don't believe any particular organization just because they have to happen to have a lot of members. They also have a political bias. You have to seek out the information yourself. You have to read a lot of sources. You know, it's like the old thing about you got to kiss a lot of frogs. I don't know any simple way to do it. I know that you stay ignorant at your own peril. That I do know. I do know it's going to become harder and harder and harder to sort it out. Also, do me another favor. Please don't believe all the fear-mongering. I had somebody call me up the other day. They want me to come and speak to their organization, and I said I'd be happy to do that. By the way, I'll come and speak to your organization anytime for free. And one of the things he said to me on the phone was, well, you know, they want to cut Social Security and they want to cut Medicare. And I said, where are you reading all this stuff? Who's this they? There's going to be a lot of fear-mongering going on both sides. There's going to be a lot of misinformation. And the only person you can trust is you. So you have to go become well-informed. You have to take on the responsibility for understanding what's going on in all of this and understand how it's going to impact you and your family. We've got new VA rules probably going to go into effect any day now. They're going to have a huge negative impact on vets. You have to be informed. Go to my website, assetsandaging.com. You can send me an email. You can ask me a question. You can set up an appointment. You can come in and see me. If you're facing frailty issues, get a hold of my book. You can go to my website as of the 15th of May, and you can buy my book. Become informed. Get to my workshops. Listen to this show. Hold family conferences. Make sure everybody knows what's going on. I'm going to be back here in just a few minutes after a little break for the news and some other good stuff, and we're going to talk about money, particularly some banks, another article, and hopefully you'll become more informed. So stick around right here on Assets and Aging. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a few minutes. See you in just a second. Welcome back to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future, the live local show that's all about the issues of aging. Well, we talked about politics a little bit because I thought it was important, but now I want to talk about the actual issues of aging. And let's spend a little time talking about those right now. And I want to talk about money. Money is everything when it comes to the issues of aging. Money is what's going to take care of me. Money is what's going to allow me to stay at home. Money is what's going to determine what level of care I can have. Money is going to determine everything about my later years and the quality of those later years. Everything is going to be about money. So again, Wall Street Journal, you can tell what my favorite newspaper is. I read a lot of them, folks. I read a lot of them online. I subscribe to a lot of them. I listen to a lot of blogs, look at a lot of news, look at a lot of stuff. But day in and day out, this is the one newspaper in the United States that tends to cover senior issues the best. So this caught my eye from the May 9th issue of the Wall Street Journal, page B1, and it's Stingy Banks Pull In Depositors. And this amazes me to this day. I do not understand. I don't understand it. I'll never understand it. It's been a mystery to me for years. Why people are still putting money in money markets and CDs at the bank. Bank of America, this is the article I'm reading from. Bank of America pays lower rates than rivals, but its services attract a stream of money. Like last year, now listen, I'm just going to read some of this. I'm not picking on a bank, I'm reading an article. Bank of America is the stingiest of the big U.S. banks, but its depositors don't seem to care. Last year, the bank paid an average of 0.08% for its interest-bearing deposits in the U.S. Stop and think about that for a minute. That was around half the rate paid by J.P. Morgan Chase or Wells Fargo. Now stop and think about that. If you double, it's still only a little over 1%. Yet Bank of America kept raking in customers' money. Such deposits increased $33 billion between 2015 and last year. Bank of America's ability to keep paying next to nothing highlights the built-in advantage of big banks, as well as changes in consumer attitudes toward deposits. For investors, it indicates some banks may be able to increase rates more slowly than in past federal because people are willing to put their money in there at 0.5% interest, 0.75% interest. Last year, they had a profit of 40%. Increase from last year while paying people record low, and all banks are doing this, folks. We're all familiar with what Wells Fargo was up to. I mean, stop and think about it for a minute. And yet we're still doing it. Yet if you look around, if you study a little bit, if you are willing to think a little bit differently, you can double or triple that rate with little or no increase in risk on the same amount of money. I just got something in the mail. I'm not going to tell you what company, because somebody will accuse me of trying to sell somebody something. But I get this stuff all the time because I subscribe to a lot. Okay, here's a company. It's paying 1.5% for 1 year guaranteed, 1.8% for 2 years guaranteed, 2.1% for 3 years guaranteed. If I have $100,000, let's stop and think about this for a minute. Put your thinking hats on and your math hats on. You ready? You got your math hats on? If you think about this for a minute, I have $100,000 and I make 0.75%. That means I made $750 on $100,000. Now, stop and think about this for a minute. What if I told you you could have 100% increase in your rate of return? Bob, 100%, I didn't say 100% interest. So instead of making 0.75%, what if you made 1.5%? That's 100% increase in your rate of return. So instead of making $750, you made $1,500 on the same $100,000. Now, let's assume there's no taxes due. Let's make this simple because everybody's got different tax issues. If I told you you could put another $750 in your pocket every year for just rethinking what you're doing, wouldn't that make sense? I don't know. It makes sense to me. I don't know if it makes sense to you. I don't know what makes sense to you. You have to decide. But money and how you look at money when you get older becomes everything. So let me look at something here I was talking about a couple weeks ago. So if I'm going to pay for a caregiver, if I decide I want to stay at home and I'm going to pay for a caregiver, wouldn't it be nice to have more money? Because that means if I'm making more interest, if I'm making more return, I'm not talking about going and investing in gold mines in Bolivia, folks. I'm talking about reasonable stuff. That means I can hire a caregiver for more hours. I'm better able to stay in my home because my money is making more money. Because once you retire, you really have no way to make more money other than by your money making more money. Does that make sense? Because you're not working. At least most of you aren't that are retired or older, or you're taking care of a mom or a dad or whoever. It makes eminent sense to me. If when I'm assessing needs for people, and we're trying to figure out where's the best place for mom, one of the starting points of that whole conversation is, how much money does mom have? What money is available to mom? Is there VA benefits available to mom? Is there Medi-Cal? Can we get a greater rate of return? Should mom be, I don't sell reverse mortgages, so don't panic, but should we be looking at a reverse mortgage so we can keep mom at home or pay, you know, those kinds of things? Money becomes everything when you're talking about, and you know, frailty issues. Everybody wants to stay home, and my question always is, when I do a workshop, my question always is the same. Okay, you want to stay at home. How are you going to pay for it? What do you mean, how am I going to pay for it? I'm going to stay home. Well, what if you can't take care of yourself at home, but you'd still like to stay home? You're going to have to pay for somebody to help you. Well, my granddaughter's going to move in. She said she'd move in for free and take care of me. Is there a care contract in place so she doesn't get accused of elder abuse for living in your house rent-free? So whatever level of care you want to stay at, money becomes important. Money becomes really important after one person dies. Because in most cases, when dad dies, what happens to mom's income? It goes down. So mom now has less ability to pay for staying at home. What if mom can't stay at home but would like to go to a nice independent living facility or assisted living facility? How's mom going to pay for that? Because her income went from $4,000. I had somebody in my office yesterday that the husband's income is $7,000 a month and the wife's income is $2,000 a month. And because they got married, she's not entitled afterwards. It's a second marriage. The wife is not eligible for his pension. So when he dies, her income is going to go from $9,000 a month to $2,000 a month. Do you think money should be a part of their discussion? I think it's an important issue. I think it's a very important issue. And I think more people should address it and look at money, and I've said this more than once over 18 years, not so much for its intrinsic value, but for its long-term care value. So it still amazes me. I mean, it really does amaze me that people are still out there going down to the corner bank or savings and loan or whatever. Well, we don't have savings and loans anymore, but you know what I'm talking about. And they're happily turning over money that they're going to need. So let's say that somebody's had money in a bank for the last 5 years at 1% and they could have been making 2. How much money have they lost that they can never, ever get back? They can never get it back. It's gone forever. You can't make up for money that you didn't get. So when you begin to look around and see what you have and begin to look at money for its long-term care value, which I think is how people should be looking at it, then I think it's important for you to be honest about what do you have and how long would it take care of you. I have somebody right now that I'm dealing with, and one spouse has a debilitating illness. Who was going to be that spouse's caregiver? As that spouse got worse and worse and worse, who was going to take care of that spouse? Well, the well spouse was. Well, guess what just happened? The well spouse is now seriously ill. And there's a good chance that the person who was formerly the well spouse is going to predecease the ill spouse. So now who's going to be the caregiver for the person with the debilitating disease? And how are they going to pay for it? Because before, the well spouse was going to take care of the ill spouse. Lots of people are in that circumstance. Lots of you, there's an age difference. Mom is 65, dad's 80. Now, if mom's 65, or it could be, you know, there's a 15, I don't care, I'm just using an example, and dad dies, the odds are highly likely that dad would be the first one to die in my example. And mom's 65, mom could easily be alone for 20 years. Easily. And mom's income, because she retired, is going to be a lot less. And mom's going to have to live on that for maybe 20 years. And part of those 20 years may be mom needing care. The realities of this world, folks, are a stark contrast to the fantasies about this world where we're all just going to die asleep at home at night, pardon me, in bed, surrounded by our family. That's not how most people end their life. That's not how most people die. Pardon me. I told you I have a little cold here, and I have a little coffee throat. So everything you do as you get older has to be based around my care needs. As I lose independence, who's going to take care of me? How am I going to pay for it? We're all going to get older. The only thing that keeps us from getting older is dying. That has a whole other set of problems. I was talking to a son earlier in the week, and we started talking about what his mother couldn't do because he's helping to take care of her. And as I started to go through the list, I ask the same question all the time, and I'll ask it of you in the audience. And I'll say it the same way I say it to somebody sitting in my office. And that is, I'm going to ask you some questions. Don't be helpful. So think of that person in your life that's beginning to fail. And then I want you to, as I ask these questions, whether it's you or a spouse or your grandma or whoever it is, as I begin to ask these questions, I want you to answer them in your head honestly. Can whoever this person is, your mom, dad, whoever it is, can they stand up from a chair unassisted? Notice I said unassisted. Can they walk unassisted? All the things I'm giving you, by the way, are called activities of daily living. Can they dress themselves unassisted? Can they take care of their personal hygiene unassisted? Can they feed themselves unassisted? Can they prepare their own meals unassisted? Can they manage their medication unassisted? If you cannot do two of the ADLs I just gave you, you're considered disabled. So that person in your life, it might be you, when you begin to answer those questions, and then ask yourself this question, even if they can do them, is it harder for them to do them now than it was a year ago or 2 years ago? So if you move the clock forward, where are they going to be a year or 2 years from now? And then I'm going to add one more. That person you're thinking about in your head, in your family, do they fall? They do? Well, Bob, they've only fallen once. No. Nobody ever falls once. If somebody's fallen once, they've fallen twice. If somebody's fallen twice, they've fallen four times. If someone's fallen four times, they've fallen 10 times. Nothing good happens with falls. So when we begin to look at money, I want you to look at it in my world. I want you to look at it for nothing beyond its ability to take care of me as I become less able to do the activities of daily living. Can that person still drive? If they can't drive anymore, then somebody's going to have to take them to get their groceries and take them to the doctor. Do they have macular degeneration? What's going to happen over time if they have macular degeneration? They're going to become blind. As they become blind, are they going to need help getting around the house? Are they going to need help bathing themselves? Are they going to need help dressing themselves? Are they going to need help going for a walk in the evening because they like to take a walk every evening to stay healthy? I live in the real world, folks. I live where my people live. I see it every day. I'm in nursing homes on a regular basis, in assisted living. I know all the good ones. I know all the bad ones. I know all the realities of what happens. I know the struggles that families face. I know how difficult it is. Everybody tells me the son that came in that was taking care of his mom is just apoplectic. because he never ever imagined all he was going to be making all the decisions that he's now having to make. Are you willing to get involved in a parent's life? Do you have the documents that are going to allow you to get involved in a parent's life or a grandparent's life? Are you willing to make really, 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 I'm going to go on for this for a while, really, 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 really hard decisions? Are you being honest with yourself about where your family really is? Do you have fights in your family? Is it a, are there some kids we like, some kids we don't like? I didn't say love, I said like. Is it a second marriage and he has his own assets and she has her own assets and his kids have one, they have one set of opinions and her kids have another set of opinions? And at the root of all of it is money. Every family fight is about money. It's about who's getting what. So that money that you have, you can keep putting it away at 0.5%. You can keep doing whatever you're doing with it. But remember, that's what's going to make decisions for you. That's going to decide where you stay, where you don't go. That's going to decide whether you go there. I can tell you right now, folks, there are people in nursing homes who could be in assisted living rather than a nursing home, but they don't have the money to pay for it. So they need to be in the nursing home so that Medi-Cal will help pay for it. I can't tell you I see it every day, but I've seen it enough to know that it's true. There are people who want to stay at home rather than go to assisted living, but home care is the most expensive form of care. It's $10,000 to $12,000 a month for round-the-clock care or more, who wind up in assisted living because they don't have the money to stay at home. Money has to be at the beginning of the conversation when we start talking about long-term care and who's going to take care of mom and who's going to take care of dad and who's going to take care of me, because money is going to make a lot of those, I shouldn't say make decisions, but what it's going to do is limit your decisions. Somebody told me a long time ago that what money buys is choice. And I always thought that that was a wise, wise statement. So are you going to, is your mode of taking care of a family member or yourself as you get older left to chance and left to circumstance and all of that kind of left to luck? Or is it going to be planned out and you're going to have the ability to make choices? I see so many people in 25 years who were doing things because we have no other choice, because it was never going to happen, because they lived in a world of fantasy and the family lived in the world of fantasy for the 5 years that mom had dementia before she completely lost it, and then everybody was surprised. If you learn nothing else from this show and from me, it's that you have to put yourself in a position to be able to make choices. That begins with the planning process, with documents, with family conferences, with making sure we understand how our money can be used. We make sure we understand what's going to be available to us when we need care. We're open, we're honest, and we are not living in a fantasy world about all of this. If you would like to begin to make a difference in your family's life, get on the phone at the end of this show or now and call me at 800-999-8007. 800-999-8007. Get in to see me. The consultation is free. I encourage you to bring the family, or at least some of the family, whatever you want to do. It's important for everybody to be on the same page. Most people who lose everything, and every year in the United States, it's estimated that 500,000 people, families, lose everything due to the cost of one person being in a nursing home. And most of that happened as a result of no planning and living in a fantasy land where it was never going to happen to me or my family or my mom or my dad or whoever it is. You can make a difference in your life, in the life of your family. It starts with admitting that we're all going to get older, we're all going to lose independence, being willing to look at what we're doing from money. We've talked about money a little bit, but documents and who's in control and who do I want making decisions for me and what are the goals I want for my life and what do I want my children to know about how I want to be taken care of and all of those kinds of things. Otherwise, circumstance will make the choice for us, and that's not always a good thing. If you're driving on bald tires, they may not blow. But there's a better chance that they're going to blow than if you have good tires. And the results of your tires blowing is not good. This is the same thing. You can make this better by beginning the process of planning, having a plan, having it figured out in advance. 800-999-8007. 800-999-8007. Give me a call. Get to a workshop. Go to my webpage, assetsandaging.com. Get a hold of my book, which is available on my website. Get to one of my workshops. Those are also, you can sign up on my website. But begin the process of making a difference in your life so that at the end of life, you can answer the question, who's going to take care of you and how are you going to pay for it? Until next week, I hope you have a wonderful day, and we'll see you here next week right here on Assets and Aging. Bye-bye.